Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Daniel Davis Deep Dive Roadshow Edition. I'm just about to leave my Caribbean location, heading back to D.C., but too many things are happening for us to wait until we get back to the studio on Monday. President Trump overnight put out in a Truth Social that he thinks we're close to some kind of a deal. And after this long message of explaining all these different people that he talked to, et cetera, he said the final aspects and details of the deal are currently being discussed and will be announced shortly. In addition to any other elements of the agreement, the Strait of Hormuz will be open. That's his opening gambit there. That was last night. Today, all kinds of information, all kinds of rumors, leaks coming out online through Axios and several other places about what could be in the deal, stuff coming out of the Middle East. They're all in general agreement. But this morning from New Delhi, Marco Rubio was trying to defend this and telling people why he thought it was a good idea.
Some progress has been made, significant progress, although not final progress has been made. Ultimately, I remind everybody, I think this ties into the second question that was asked in relations to it. What is the goal here? The goal here ultimately, the ultimate goal is that Iran can never have a nuclear weapon. Iran can never possess a nuclear weapon. The president has been clear about that. They will never possess a nuclear weapon, certainly not as long as Donald Trump is president of the United States.
Okay, so he said they're kind of repeating the same mantra. Can't have a nuclear weapon. Okay, vitally important to make crystal clear. Everybody is understanding what is going on here and what is even being talked about. He's making it sound like, look, all we have to do is make sure there's no nuclear weapon, and then we can live in peace. We had a deal in place in 2015. It was called the JCPOA. And that basically guaranteed, as close as you can, that there would never be a nuclear weapons program because we had inspectors on the ground. We had tight limits on the reprocessing they could do, just minuscule 3.67%. There were people on the ground to make sure that didn't happen, that they could only have a small amount of reprocessed material. As part of the deal, they took what they did have and shipped it out of the country, hundreds of pounds of this stuff in various grades, and they kept largely within their terms. We didn't. And then, of course, just 3 years into what was supposed to be a 10-year deal with a sunset in 2025 with the renegotiation capabilities, President Trump decided, nope, that's not good enough. I want a better deal. Got rid of everything that we had. That started the clock rolling to what eventually turned into the war we're trying to get a negotiated settlement out. Now, secondly, there's a lot of things that happened in between, but vitally important, even more important than the JCPOA, is that on the 26th of February, we had a golden deal that was even better than the JCPOA, legitimately. I did not think that they would be able to negotiate that, but the outlines were there through the mediation of Oman. And they said, yep, we're willing to have it. No nuclear weapons program. We declare it. Everything President Trump is now saying that he wants, he had in his hand and instead chose to go to war. That's point number one. Then he says they can't have a nuclear weapons program. Okay, well, they've always been saying it. They said it again just this past week. They don't want a nuclear weapons program. They don't have a nuclear weapons program. There was no imminent threat of a nuclear weapon 2 weeks away, as it was fraudulently claimed, that led us into this war. So when he says that's our objective, understand we already had that. And now that we're trying for a third time to go back and get the same terms we've already had twice on the table. And the chances that we're going to be able to get this after having assassinated their leader, after having sunk 158 of their ships, blown up all kinds of factories and other kinds of industries on the surface, oil fields, gas fields, all kinds of other people being assassinated. If you think that we're going to get the same deal or as good a deal as we had before after doing that, seems pretty unlikely. Stranger things have happened. We'll wait and see. The next thing Rubio does is go back to one of his good old-fashioned things. I'm going to lecture you about what you're doing. Just don't look at what I'm doing.
This issue of the straits. Okay, this is an international waterway. They don't own it. It's an international waterway. And what they are doing now is basically they are threatening to destroy commercial vessels using an international waterway. That is illegal under any concept of international law that governs us, but it's also an unacceptable. If we allowed that to become normal, we would be normalizing an unacceptable status quo and setting a dangerous precedent that can be replicated here in this region and in multiple places around the world.
Okay. How dare they do that? First of all, let me just say that Iran did violate international law by doing this. You can't just blow up civilian ships in the strait as they did to send a signal, this is what we're going to do. But you also can't be shocked when they do that. This is one of the things that I've been harping on for years on this channel. You have all of these actions that we have, and then when there is a reaction and a counteraction, we act all surprised. Like, I can't believe they did that. See how evil and wicked they are. Look, if you go to war with a country, if you assassinate their leaders, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to take whatever leverage they have, and they're going to exploit it for their benefit. It's according to international law. It's wrong, but it's also not shocking that they would do this. You're talking about the assassination. There's been a lot of information in the news for the last 48 hours or so that allegedly President Trump's daughter was the target of an assassination by Iran as retaliation. I don't know if that's true or not. It could be made up. It could also be very much true. After all, when we assassinated their leader, his wife was killed, his daughter-in-law was killed, his granddaughter was killed. So it's not out of the question that something could happen. But that, in again, is an example of what I'm talking about. You want to be able to, with impunity, assassinate people left and right all over the place, which Trump himself has been doing since 2010. And then you act shocked that there are, quote, sick people who would think of doing this. And look, anytime you're talking about killing civilians, it is bad. And I hope that nothing happens to her. No caveats involved here. I hope that they protect her, I hope it's not even true. But if it is true, I hope they protect her. But damn it, you can't keep assassinating other people and their children and their spouses and their families and think no one's ever going to do anything about it. You are gambling with our safety. And I've long said I fear that it's only a matter of time before one of our leaders is assassinated in retaliation for what we've done to others. I hope it doesn't happen, but man, we are gambling that it won't, that we think we can keep doing things to others that they're not going to do to here. And this issue here he just raised about the you can't destroy ships and stuff. Remember about 2 or so, 3 weeks ago, President Trump was bragging about how our warships went in and fired through the engine room of a ship because it wasn't doing what we told it to do. We boarded all these ships. Remember that? So how can you stand there and tell the world, how dare Iran do this and block international waterways when you're blocking civilian ships and disabling them with weapons? So just stop with the hypocrisy. This continues to undercut our credibility, reputation on the global stage and does not help us find a negotiated settlement here, because all it's going to do is create anger on the other side. Now, one of he says, speaking of hypocrisy, and it has to be pointed out, he's saying, listen, all President Trump wants to do is just find a diplomatic way out.
The desire the president has, his preference, is to find a diplomatic way that these problems can be solved. That's always the president's preference. He would much rather have me and the Department of State solve this problem than the Department of War having to solve this problem. But the problem's going to be solved one way or the other. So we've made some progress over the last 48 hours working with our partners in the Gulf region on an outline that could ultimately, if it succeeds, leave us not just with a completely open straits, and I mean open straits without tolls, and with addressing some of the key things that underpin what has been Iran's nuclear weapons ambitions in the past. So we think we've made some progress on the outline of something that, if it works, could give us that outcome.
Okay, just even on that, how many caveats can you have on a deal? Okay, we have the potential outlines of a possible plan that might work if everybody, good grief, man, do we have anything or not? Look, this is just another one of the ham-fisted, just incompetent ways we do negotiations. You don't come out and say, we have a deal, we have the outlines of a deal, and everything is about to be fine. And then when your Secretary of State, your chief diplomat comes out and says, we literally have nothing has been agreed to. Not the tolls, because the Iranian media has come out and said, by the way, we're not going to, that issue that there's, it's going to go back to what it was before the war started, that's not going to be the case. When they say open traffic on the Iranian definition of it, they mean their toll system. They say, yeah, everybody can go through. As long as they pay our tolls, there'll be no problem whatsoever. We're saying, yeah, everything goes back the way it was before. Well, they have control of the strait, and they have been saying repeatedly over the last week or so, and one imagines that when these negotiations have been going back and forth through intermediaries in Pakistan and elsewhere, that the Iranian side knows what's trying to be done here. And they said, listen, we are never going back to what it was before. This is the new reality, and it's not going to change. So I think they were signaling during these debates or discussions and exchanges of letters back and forth that they're saying that's not going to change. We're going to retain control of it, because I think the phrase they used was, you're not going to get in negotiations what you fail to get in combat. They said that several times. I'm pretty sure that that's what that was in reference to. But the other thing, again, he says, you know, President Trump just wants a diplomatic way. Dude, you had a diplomatic way. You've had it. You've had the outlines of it three times, one in 2025, one in 2026, before this war started. And then now you have something on the table now you could do if you're willing to give in to negotiated terms of the Iranians, something that they can live with. That's why I said I didn't think that we could have a negotiated settlement, because Iran is in the dominant position. They have more leverage than we do. We have leverage. Not quite as much as the Iranian side does. It all comes down to who can suffer the longest, the most effectively. And I think it's pretty clear that the Iranian side has more experience in suffering, and they are suffering. So don't underestimate that. But I think that they're saying we can suffer more. So we're not going to just hand over the keys. I just can't imagine. I could be shocked. We'll see, because, man, behind the scenes, there's things going on I have no idea about. But I would be shocked if Iran agrees to say, hey, we're just going to give away everything, to something that President Trump can comfortably live with, and that it's going to be things that we don't want to live with. It's going to leave them in a worse position than they are today. I just can't see that, because they have the leverage that they had never had before and probably will never have again. And I think that you can see that some on the Iranian side are very aware of that. Now let's take a look at some of the headwinds to this. First of all, you have three parties: the U.S., Iran, and Israel. And in each of these camps, primarily, you have two camps in the camps. In the U.S. side, we have President Trump's biggest supporters who are already and emphatically against this. I've seen stuff, and I put it on my X account. You can go look at some of those from Mike Pompeo, Lindsey Graham, Senator Cruz, Mark Levin are absolutely adamant. Senator Wicker, I think, is another one. Absolutely adamant that this a bad deal is not better than no deal, they say. We need to finish them once and for all. They keep repeating that. So President Trump is going to have some difficulties, even within his own party, of having people come out and say, sure, go ahead and go back to something. Because they're saying this out loud, by the way, in writing. This is worse than the Obama deal. Surely President Trump wouldn't go to something that was worse than the Obama deal. And they keep using that term because they know it's just like fingernails on a chalkboard to Trump. He does not want to have any indication of what Obama did, much less something that wasn't as good. Listen. We've seen already the deal that Obama had was pretty good. It was nothing was ever perfect, but it was really strong. That it was going to, as close as you can, guarantee they would never have a nuclear weapons program, et cetera. And there's lots of other, besides the constraints, there was also the opportunities that would give the Iranian side incentives to want to accommodate and to want to apply the deal and live up to the terms. Then Trump had his one golden moment on the 26th of February, where he had a deal that in many ways was better than the Obama deal. And he could have relished in the diplomatic and political victory. And he said no. So the chances he's going to get one now, that he's only looking for diplomacy, is a lie. It's just categorically a lie, not an exaggeration, because he's had it. He had it in his hand and he refused it. Now then, his only motivation is to get out of this mess he created by giving these orders to launch the attack anyway. That's the reality of where we are. And he's seeing he's got headwinds in his own party, in his own inner circle. People are very much against this. Now, the military, also in his inner circle, are definitely for this. And they're saying, whatever you got to do to get this off the table, do not restart this war, because it's going to have the retaliatory capability from the Iranian side. They have the capability, and they have the intent, and they have the will, and the know-how to strike and hit targets throughout the Gulf region that would just cripple our economy and push this way into 2027, possibly 2028 and beyond, to try and recover from all this, as opposed to accepting this ugly deal here and eat some crow, suck down some of that arrogance and pride, and say, let's just get this off the table. In a sense, this is the walk away deal. So look, just pretend it's victory, whatever, and then just walk away. Pull our troops out, pull everybody back to our base, et cetera. And the waterways can reopen up. Even if Iran stays in control of the tolls, it's still open. We remove our blockade, they remove theirs, they pay the tolls, the traffic can get back. It's going to take months to unwind. So we're still in a problem where we're probably going to already have a recession. So don't think that this is going to make everything go back normal. I imagine the oil markets on Monday will probably be, the oil price will drop and the stock market will go back up again. But that's temporary. So don't get too excited about that, because the physical shortfall of energy is going to start to make its way felt. And instead of all the oil going back to like it was on the 27th of February, it's going to take months to get back to that. Months. And so we're in for a rough ride no matter what. This is still the best of the bad options. Trey Yinks this morning from on Fox News was talking about some of the details here. And he said, you know, this is loosely negotiated, reinforcing that we don't actually have anything yet other than an intent to have a negotiation. And some of the deals is that the U.S. military will stay for 30 days in the region. So we're not just going to redeploy immediately in case anything happens, in case the Iranian side restarts something, then we're going to stay there to return to the military. Or if they don't abide by the deal, he claims we'll return to the full-on military. Those are the things that the Pompeos and the Cruz and the Grahams are lusting after. He said Iran, and this is some of the key points. So he's already given some things away. He said Iran will be given sanctions waivers. So some sanctions will come off. Some of the frozen assets will be unfrozen. So they'll get potentially in the billions of dollars they'll get back to. How he's going to square this with all of his accolades or acolytes that have been saying forever that Obama gave away all this cash, and now how he's going to be doing the literal exact same thing by unfreezing Iranian assets. He's not giving them any money. He's just allowing them access to their money, just like Obama did. So we'll see how they do with that. But that's what's being announced here. And then we're saying the Strait of Hormuz will be completely open, free, and unfettered like it was before the war started. And the Iranian side is saying it will be open, but it will be fettered. It will be constrained on meeting the terms of our, I think it's called the Straits Authority. I forget the name of it now, but whatever. They have set up this organization. And now that people have been going through it, sometimes dozens of ships have passed through under this conditions here, and they say that's not going to change. That's according to Iranian media. Nothing in the deal about the nuclear weapons program. That's going to be done in the later stages, 30 and 60 days later, so they say. Don't know how he's going to square that with the claim they will never have a nuclear weapons again, but we're going to have a deal in the first part, and that's not even on the table. More on that later. Then he says there's nothing about the reprocessing. You know, it's nothing that they can't have reprocessed. Nothing about, in this terms anyway, at this point, nothing about the 60% reprocessed material, et cetera. Let's take a real quick look, like we always do, at what the other side is saying. Here is President Pezeshkian. He's talking to, I told you, there was different camps inside. There are those inside Iran that definitely want this negotiated deal. And there are those that do not. They say, no, we've got them, you know, right where we want them. We've never had them in this position. We've got leverage militarily. We've never had. Don't give in now. But President Pezeshkian is saying, listen, everybody needs to be looking at the martyred Ali Khamenei, the martyred leader that we had, you know, in his name. We need to get this negotiated settlement down. But then an IRGC leader, one of the generals, also posted something, and he also cited the martyred leader, and he said, we will not allow painful historical experiences to be replaced or repeated. So I think that he's trying to say there, listen, we're not going to go down this path we did in 2025. We're not going to go down the path we did in early 2026. We're not going to be juked out again. And we're going to agree to something. We're going to give you something. And then you're not going to follow through. So I think that what they're saying, and I'll pay a little bit more attention to the IRGC general than I do Pezeshkian, because Pezeshkian, if you're not aware of how they're, he's the president of the country, but the actual head of state is Mojtaba Khamenei, the supreme leader. And he is, of course, all these guys are former IRGC and military veterans. So they're kind of all in the same bunch. But the IRGC with Khamenei are the ones who are calling the primary shots. They are the head of state. So the president is supposed to be taking care of domestic issues within the country. So obviously he's important. But the IRGC, they're the ones that have to do with national security and issues of foreign affairs. So they're all trying to work together. But if you see one thing coming down on the IRGC and something else from Pezeshkian or possibly even Ghalibaf, I'm leaning more towards what the IRGC says. So there's a lot of confusion and conflict even within the Iranian side. So even they might not want to give into something if the Pezeshkian wing, if they agree to something and all of a sudden the IRGC doesn't want to, it could fall apart because of that as well. Lastly, here is the wild card, Israel. And everybody knows that Israel does not want this to work. And this is from Israeli media just this morning. Trump said to assure Netanyahu that he will thwart Iran's new program as Israel fears very bad deal. And that is the unspoken situation here, is that you have Netanyahu, and we showed you Alistair Crook's video this week, and you should go back and rewatch that one, because he said, listen, he needs this war. He needs this to continue on, because if it doesn't, then he is really vulnerable to go to jail, folks. Once this war is over with, now everybody's going to turn their attention back to the domestic issues, which preceded even 10/7/2023 and has been kind of on hold. And if these wars are off the table, then everybody's going to look back there. One of the other things is that from the Iranian side is that the ceasefire has to apply across the board to include Lebanon. There was an attack against Lebanon last night, which I think was a shot across the bow, which Netanyahu has done before when we had the first ceasefire that had to include Lebanon. You remember it didn't, and they had this big, huge strike, the biggest one ever after that had been announced. So there are so many headwinds against this deal working out here. I hope that it does. But man, we have to be sober-eyed, clear-eyed about this, and sober-minded as to what's going on. So let's hope for the best, but we'll see what happens. And I'm heading back to the airport literally right now. And as soon as I get back there Monday morning, if nothing's happened in between, we'll see you from our regular studios. But in all cases, we appreciate you guys. We'll see you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.
You know, I don't try to talk you into buying gold or tell you how to run your stock portfolio, but there is a way you can help us. Subscribe. Hit that like button and share this with somebody you love.